Hi, this is Ben Hodges. I'm editor-in-chief of Theater World Publications. I'm talking Dave Lefkowitz on Dave's Gone By on UNC Radio.
Welcome back to Dave's Gone By and a special part of the Inside Broadway segment of the show. We're talking to the editor-in-chief and the proprietor, as it were, of a very important publication for people who love and care about theater and the history of theater. See, years ago, not that many years ago, there were a couple of different encyclopedic books that would look at a Broadway and off-Broadway season and put all the facts and figures together and give you who starred in what, where were they, when was it running, what was all the basic information about the show, plus a little bit about the synopsis, and what it meant to the season in general, and what awards did it win, or was it up for? Well, for many, many years, Best Plays was the king of that circuit, as it were. Best Plays was the encyclopedia, and I know this because I worked for it for a couple of years with a fellow named Otis Guernsey. But economics being as they are, and changes in people and times being what they are, Best Plays kind of drifted off into the sunset a couple of years ago, leaving only its main real competitor, which is Theater World. Now, Theater World has been around for many, many years, too, and that was the place to go to for all the pictures. That was where you went if you wanted to see what the shows looked like 40, 50 years ago, 60 years ago, how the actors looked, what the sets were. And you could still do that year after year after year. And the beautiful thing is that you still can. That Theater World is still alive. Not only that, it's going strong and is, in my opinion, I think in a lot of people's opinions, a better book than it ever, ever was, even under the stewardship of John Willis. And we'll talk about him in a couple of minutes. But I just want to tell you that the guy who runs Theater World, one of the co-founders, in fact, is with us. His name is Ben Hodges, and he's on the phone to talk about the book. How you doing, Ben?
I'm doing well. I'm really happy to be here to talk about the book.
Actually, I said you're one of the founders. I don't think you could possibly be, because that goes back way older than you are. But you've been there.
Let's not completely negate the fact that I did found Theater World Media. We're now the publishers of the publication.
Right.
So I did found the publishing company that publishes it now, and I'm the editor-in-chief, so you're not completely wrong on that.
I won't mind being half wrong most of the time, because you can fool some of the people. But let me ask, 23 years ago, you met John Willis, who was the editor and founder, the true founder, of Theater World, the book. So how did you cross paths, and what did you think of the book back then, etc.?
Well, it's interesting. I'm actually speaking to you today from Morristown, Tennessee, which is both my hometown as well as John Willis's.
Oh.
And that's how I came to know John, is although he was much older than I am, my family said that I should look him up because he was sort of the hometown boy made good, and they thought perhaps he could help me with my then-fledgling acting career. And so one of the first things I did when I got to New York was look him up. And, of course, there was no computer in those days.
Right.
Google John and find out what he had done. So I didn't really know much about him other than everyone in my hometown was very enamored with him, and they wanted me to connect with him in order to possibly help me and just someone to know in New York. And
Before you go further on that, I mean, it's interesting to me that he would be a big hometown boy made good just because he came up with a theater book. Is that really why he was known back then?
Well, I think it's important to remember that John was there at the beginning of the formation of both the books as well as the Theater World Awards. So, And this is going back to 1991 when I met him. So again, without computers, these books really were the definitive record of theater in America, and as such, garnered him a lot of clout. But in addition to that, the Theater World Awards are also now 68 years old.
At
91, they were going strong for Broadway and off-Broadway debuts. It's now a quite major awards ceremony. In 1991, John did it all. He was a one-man band. He was about 75 years old at that point, but he did everything himself, from the press release to contacting the award winners. Over the course of those years, in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s, when John was in charge of the awards, people like Bernadette Peters and Harvey Fierstein and Mos Def, I mean, anyone you can possibly think of, made their Broadway debuts and consequently won a Theater World Award, given pretty much by John. There was also a staff of theater critics.
Well, let's also explain two different things. First of all, when you say books, John Willis was also the guy who did the Screen World books.
He did. It's interesting because when I met John, he was doing Theater World and Screen World. He had done Dance World in the 70s. It didn't live. It lived from about 1968 to 1982 or so. And it was a wonderful, of course, it captured probably the most wonderful decade of dance in America, but it didn't live past 1982. But he did all of these books.
I should mention, I even have a copy of Opera World that I think he did for a year.
There's one copy, right?
Yeah, I've got it.
There was one copy. But he did all of these basically single-handedly on a typewriter and attended the theater every night. In fact, he holds the unofficial record for having attended more theater performances than any other person alive or dead.
Wow.
But the only way that the Guinness Book of World Records would recognize that, and I did investigate it thoroughly, was to have the ticket stubs.
And he didn't keep them?
And that was the one thing. From all of the performances that he attended that he did not keep. He kept the playbills and the photographs and the press releases, but the ticket stubs seemed of no historical importance to him, rightly so. So there's no way to prove that, but everyone in the theater community and otherwise pretty much acknowledges that he's the guy with the record.
Wow. And how often do you go to the theater, Ben Hodges?
Not as much as I would like to go. I go as much as I can. If it's something that I feel like I really need to see, then I will do so. I just wanted to back up to finish your first question and say that when I looked John up, called him up, and I told him who I was, and I said, I'm told you can help me out in the theater, and he said, my boy, if I could have done that for anybody, I would have done it for myself. So, but I'll take you to the theater. And so he then began to take me to the theater very regularly, and I then, of course, got involved in the books. I would go over on my days off from waiting tables at the time and help him with the books. Over time, as his health declined, I took over more and more of the responsibilities. To tie that into what your most recent question was, I don't go to the theater as much as I would like to because I'm so busy working on this book. So ironic in that respect. Now, the seasoned editors who write the seasonal overviews, from Adam Feldman, who writes the Broadway overview, Shay Gines, who writes the Off-Off, and Rob Weinert, who does the regional theater overviews, the only such overviews online or in print, created annually every year to sort of recap the season, they go every night, practically, and it's more important that they go because they're writing the overviews. I more or less oversee the production of the book and the editing of the book and the design of the book now that I'm the publisher of the publication, as well as Screen World, which is the only pictorial statistical record of the foreign and domestic film seasons.
Being the publisher, quote-unquote, the imprint, though, is it Hal Leonard or...?
No, the imprint is Theater World Media.
So you literally, where do you publish?
Literally the publisher.
Yeah.
Hal Leonard and Applause distribute the book.
Okay.
They're only our distributors. Obviously, it's helpful to keep that logo and that information on the book, as well as the Theater World Media's logo is on the book. You'll notice it's on there as our imprint, and it will say an imprint of Theater World Media, but it's helpful to keep Hal Leonard and Applause on there because they've been around for so long. So they do distribute the books, they send out the catalogs, and they house the books and all of the logistical things with the book. But as far as the design, the publication, the print, the paper, everything is overseen by me. So,
and where does it go? In other words, where do you physically make the book? Do you ship it overseas? Is it?
Well, we really, you know, it's so interesting. It's such an interesting dichotomy in this age of the internet that we're all sort of spread out to create this analog book. My regional editor stays at home. My designer's in Hoboken. The designers or the editors are all basically in various points around New York City. The printer's in China.
Oh, in China? Okay, I was wondering about that.
And, you know, that changes because the market changes so often. Sometimes there's a better deal in Mexico, sometimes there's a better deal in China, sometimes where the paper doesn't come out quite so good in Canada, so we go to another country. So it's sort of, we shop around every year, every spring when we get ready to print the book to see what the best deal is that we can get, and of course, by reputable printers. So what that has enabled me to do, and probably why Best Plays has not survived, is by doing everything in-house, it's enabled me to cut the costs, to coordinate everything. I don't get paid as much as the editors on the book, but that's because what they do is more important. I don't know that if this were the New York Times, that the publisher would think that would necessarily be the case. So the fact that I'm able to control the publication, but also the fact that this book has always been produced, never for monetary gain or material gain, but because it's a labor of love, means that it's going to continue and survive even transitions that are going on in the print industry right now.
Is it one of the things that most of us who toil in the theater world, if you actually added up your hours and compare them to the salary that you get and the money that you make, you're making about $1.50 an hour or something like
that? Really, that much?
Okay, we both know. But here's the thing that I didn't realize. John Willis was chief cook and bottle washer. You're sort of the head of the kitchen now, but you still have a zillion things to do. The question then is, while all this is going on, are you a full-time practicing attorney?
I am.
So that's, we forgot to mention that part.
I'm an entertainment attorney in New York City. I'm a sole practitioner. I also do, I work with various other attorneys. If they need extra things done, if they need extra hands, I help. I help prep lawsuits.
Oh, my.
In various areas of the law as a contract attorney. But my sole focus is, or my main focus is being an entertainment attorney. And that really enables me to have the income to be able to continue these books. While they're not, it's not a financial enterprise, it is doing very well. We're doing better than breaking even. Sales are increasing, probably because we have gotten some of the best plays, library and college university business, because this pretty much is distributed to every major college and university library in the country.
Sure.
As well as having a huge devoted fan base. So we're actually doing quite well, and the fact that we're more current than ever, larger than ever, with more productions and photographs than ever, and now more regional theaters covered, over 70 than ever, it's actually doing quite well. And you can't find, the internet isn't necessarily all it's cracked up to be with respect to completeness and accuracy and being able to find everything in one place.
I agree with you in the sense that I'm the publisher of Performing Arts Insider, or I should say the co-publisher and the editor-in-chief of this magazine that's been around since 1944. It's got what's on Broadway, what's off Broadway, all this information, how to contact people. It's a major thing that's been around for 68 years. I didn't start it, I didn't found it. I came in after with Richmond Shepherd, and he's kind of in name only on it now, but he still has input on the magazine. But what our selling point is for the subscribers who do pay a lot of money to have it is, yeah, you can sort of find most of this information on the internet, but you have to really scour, and one thing's going to be on this website, and something else is going to be over there, and another thing might be on this database. And I can say, no, here it is, 21 times a year, it's all in 50 to 60 pages, in your hand, on your desk, boom.
And that information, by the way, may disappear from that website at some point.
That's right.
That they find it on. And that's something that people, just because something's on a website today does not mean it's going to be there tomorrow.
Have you had the temptation, or probably not, of going and taking all the, at least the older books, and just digitizing them and putting them online for a theater world website?
Well, this is interesting, because pretty much everyone I meet, be it a bar or on a radio program, asks me why we haven't done this. And first of all, it's tremendously expensive. Mm. Second of all, I know that eventually someone else is going to do this. If and when they do, all of this information will be ready for them to input. And whether it's us or someone else who digitizes this and makes it available online, it's going to be much less expensive to do it later than it is now. But in the meantime, we've compiled all of the data. So when people talk to me about this publication, I spend a lot of time trying to really get people to understand how I think of what we do as the editors of Theater World, as not editors of a book, but as data compilers. We're really compiling data that is going to be used for probably centuries to come, and it's the only available information in a comprehensive way in one place about what we do. So I'm not as concerned about the various changes in the formats and forms in which this information is going to change in the future, but we are compiling it in the meantime so that if and when it is transferred over into many different kinds of media, it will be there in order to do so. So I've created, my main focus is being able to make sure that it's continually compiled, which is the hardest, the most important, and more.
Yeah, but actually that's almost contradicting yourself in a way, because if you're just compiling the data, the easiest way to do that is just have the data, keep the records, and then put it all on the internet. The hard part is, and the expensive part, I guess, is the far-flung bit of putting it between covers, sending big books to China, and then, you know, I think the value of the book is that it is a book. You can go to your shelf, and that you can pick it up, and you want to flip through photographs from...
It is valuable. I only mean that the relevance, because I get questioned about the relevance quite often.
Well, the relevance is a big animal that eats peanuts, but yes?
Exactly. But in addition to that, the other reason that this information isn't online is because there would be a major copyright issue with respect to the photographs.
Ah, yes.
And as you mentioned at the top of the show, Theater World really is known as the photographic record of the American theater. Now, there would be a way, I'm actually friends, obviously, after so long of doing this publication, for me to be able to print the photographs in book form, obviously have to have some sort of an arrangement with the photographers of whose photographs are included.
Yeah,
we have an informal arrangement. We sort of have a sui generis sort of arrangement with the photographers, and after so long, they would probably have a hard time arguing against it because they've allowed me permission for so long to publish them, but they are thankful to have their photographs published in the book, and I'm thankful for their use, and it's a rising tide that sort of lifts all boats with respect to publicity. But just to touch on the one point that you made with respect to the relevance and importance of the book, unless we do and continue to publish the print publication and distribute it, even as difficult as it is worrying about the paper, whereas your argument that it would be much easier to do in a digital format is taken, unless we get it out there in hardcover format, it's not necessarily going to be in those libraries.
Oh, right.
That Google is going to digitize and then proliferate. And so it's important for us to proliferate the book to all ends of the earth in hardcover format, because the people who digitize those libraries, the more pervasive we are, the more important that we're going to seem, the more important that we're going to be recognized and utilized, if that makes sense.
Absolutely.
Okay.
I'm curious, what run do you do on the books?
We do about a 2,000 copy print run, and we go through, in the initial year or so after the release of each annual book, we go through a half to three quarters of that, and then we'll go through the other quarter, two or three, 4 years afterwards, and then it's going to be out of print. Remember, I've only been publishing this for a couple of years. The prior publisher, one of the reasons we're actually doing better is we do not print 4,000 books.
Because now, the other thing I was going to say is the step in publishing that's really happened over the past 10 years, at least for self, quote-unquote, publishing people, is that if some author wants to publish 100 copies of his book, there are ways. He doesn't have to do 10,000, or he doesn't have to
print on demand. Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I mean, I wrote a large treatise on this in law school about the transformation. Well, it was specifically about the Google Books search settlement, because I find it very interesting. This whole digital library that Google is trying to create and the resistance put up against it by authors, that's an entirely different conversation. But, yes, I have a book called Forbidden Acts, which was published in 2003. If it had been published 10 years earlier, say 1993, that book wouldn't even be able to be found. It wouldn't be able to be ordered. It wouldn't be able to be used as it is in colleges and universities. It's an anthology of plays. Because of the advent of print on demand, my publisher for that book, which was also Applause, if they get a call from a college or a university and they need 50 copies for a course they're teaching that they want to use the book for, they just order 50 copies.
That's the sea change.
Exactly what you're talking about. So it's a really wonderful thing. Now, the rights to those books don't revert to the artists as fast as they wish, so one could argue that I could be printing those books and making more money. But any author of any reference book or trade reference academic publication is going to tell you they do it because they want people to get the information.
Sure.
Not because they're trying to be rich. We can be rich in other ways, hopefully, in order to support that endeavor. But so I think it's really wonderful what has happened in a general way with respect to book digitization. I think there's a way for everyone to do well from it. But I think it helps for every author when they get really, and a lot of them get very upset, particularly older authors who don't necessarily understand the technology as well, to understand that ultimately decades from now, and as a historian, which I am first and foremost, which is why I was working on this book when I wasn't getting paid for it for over 10 years,
yeah.
is because this information and the ability to get this information to generations subsequent to us is much more important than the couple of dollars we may get from a copy that's sold in hard cover format. So that's my philosophy, and that's sort of how I've viewed what we're doing.
And you do just a hard copy run. You don't do a soft cover a year later or anything like
we
that.
We did, but it wasn't cost effective to do that. It's another thing that we've done. We've done away with the dust jacket, which some people are up in arms about. However, if you go to any college, university, library, or even Lincoln Center, as soon as they get a book with a dust jacket, they throw it away.
Oh, wow.
And you're left with a cloth binding, which basically has the name of the book, and that's all. You don't see the photographs of the book. You don't hear anything about the authors or how old the book is or how many years it's been printed. And I really was really upset about that and talked to Lincoln Center, and I said, you know, this, why are you throwing the dust jackets away? Well, they get old, they get torn, it's harder to handle the books. And I thought, well, if such a large part of our audience is disposing of the dust jacket anyway, which all over the country, which they are, then why pay the extra $2, $3, $4 a copy we're doing to create one? And so that's why we now have a lithograph, so everything's self-contained.
And it looks great, by the way. I think when I would get these books, the Best Plays books as well, when I try and find them in stores or order them on eBay, I try and get the nicest looking dust jacket too, because I was a collector. But having the books the way they are and looking with a perfectly nice, lovely colored cover with all that information, I think it looks great. I don't miss dust jackets at all on it. I think it's perfectly fine. Anyway, we're talking with Penn Hodges, who publishes Theater World. But let me ask, you still, as you said, you don't go to the theater as much as you wish, or as John Willis did, or as your editors do, but given the past season, which the book that came out is 11-12, so you're working on 12-13. Mm-hmm. What were your thoughts about the season as a whole, your favorite things, least favorite, blah, blah, blah?
Well, you know what's wonderful about the theater and people, every year someone's lamenting how expensive Broadway is and theater is dying, and there's always those naysayers out there. But, you know, there's always, when you collect such a comprehensive amount of information about each annual theater season, which comes and goes before you know it, really,
yeah.
all of us. And people may visit New York and they may see a couple of shows and they go home, and then they may come back, you know, 3, 4, 5 years later and see a couple of shows and they go home. But for us, as historians and editors, these seasons are continually evolving and changing, and there's little stories during each season that make things interesting. There's strikes, and there are shows like Rebecca the Musical, which, you know, goes down in flames just as Manderly did in the movie. So there's always really exciting things that happen if you're in the thick of it. And there's also always wonderful things that happen every year. I mean, this year we had Cyndi Lauper win a Tony for Kinky Boots and for her music, which was really, really wonderful. We had Cicely Tyson, who won a Tony. She's the oldest Tony winner. And
Did you have an official?
Even her younger quoted age, which we're not sure is correct.
Right, yeah, that's the thing. Nobody really knows.
No one really knows, but still, whatever her age is, she's the oldest Tony winner for a performance, and she was just amazing in The Trip to Bountiful, which happens to be my favorite play. But I'm from Tennessee. I'm a big Horton Foote fan. I really love his work, and I think it's very accessible and simple and real. But in any case, so there's always wonderful things to get excited about, and so this season we had, those are just a couple of standouts. And then Pippin, which, you know, everyone's sort of been a big fan of Pippin in their living rooms or in high school musicals, and then this is the first revival of it since it premiered in the early 70s on Broadway, and it was a really great revival, and Andre Martin was wonderful in it, and she got a Tony. So there's always something to be really excited about. And by the way, all those shows are still playing, at least Bountiful for a couple.
And you know what I love about, a little bit about Best Plays, but especially about Theater World, is that, I mean, now you've got these longer intros and the people talking about Broadway and off-Broadway, and they're doing, you know, subjective stuff about what the season was, the hits, the flops, but the inside of the book, and this is going back for the decades, every show is essentially gets the same fare. They all get the page with all the information, with all the photos, whether it ran or will continue to run 5 or 10 years, or if it closed in 2 nights. That's the,
I'm really happy. This makes me so happy. When I'm sitting in my little office in my apartment thinking about the direction of this book and what we're trying to do and how we're trying to do it, and I make these decisions that I don't think anyone else will ever pick up on, and when they do, like you just did, because it was a very, very conscious decision of mine to make sure that these seasonal overviews are not the same kind of critical assessment of the season. And when you said subjective, mentioning the hits and the flops, that's really not subjective. That's objective, because if something's a hit and sells a lot of tickets and it still runs, or something's a flop, well, everybody knows that, and that's objective regardless of whether the show is good or not. And I really counseled my editors to make sure that they're not making judgments about what's good and what's not good, but rather to really tell the story of what succeeds, what doesn't succeed. They may tell you why, and it may be from a critical reason. If a piece of scenery falls on somebody and the quote show never recovers, or a director sues a producer, and those may be reasons behind why something may be a hit or a flop. But I really made a conscious effort to make sure that they all understood that this is not your column for your newspaper, which they basically all have in various forms.
Well, Adam Feldman is from Time Out, right?
Adam Feldman's from Time Out. Rob Weinert-Kent's from American Theater.
Oh, yeah.
Guines has the New York Innovative Theater Awards, and they publish blogs and have an extensive website. And Linda Buchwald has several publications that she writes for. She does Off-Broadway. So they all really needed to understand from me that this is not for you, your fun time to pontificate on what the theater should be or what, but really to talk about what the season was, because this is a historical reference book. And by the way, that's the reason I'm not a critic.
Mm.
I obviously, one would think, had opportunities, and many of them, back when print media was much more successful than it is now, to have taken a job as a critic. And I really resisted that because I don't necessarily really believe in that. I don't think that it's necessarily anyone else's job to really decide whether or not something is good or not for someone else. And of course, the people who read the publications can decide whether or not they want to listen to those reviewers or not. But I never thought, for some reason I've always had a problem with it, an ethical issue with it. And there are also always usually people who didn't succeed themselves. And I didn't think it was really right for people. Now, if Zoe Caldwell or Rosemary Harris or even Alec Baldwin, the way he criticizes critics, want to create a column and write about the theater, I think, you know, maybe I would give them all a little more credence because they've been there and they've done that and they've succeeded at it to some degree. But I've never really understood why it is that we give jobs to people who have not succeeded completely in their chosen initial field of so that's another reason why
I would love to have a round table with you and a couple of critics, of which I am, by the way, and have been for 25 years.
Well,
but I think it would be a fun conversation
And it's important, and it's wonderful. I don't go out there and write articles about how theater criticism is horrible. I'm not going to do that. We're having a conversation about, you brought up why we don't really create hierarchies of why certain shows, you know, give more attention to certain shows than others, and that's why, is because I don't think that it's my job to do that. And if other people think it's their job to do that, that's fine. And I'm not going to criticize them for doing that. I don't think I've sat here and said we shouldn't have theater critics. I just don't personally subscribe to it, and I wouldn't certainly have anyone on my staff who didn't adhere to an objective way of looking at the season, which is really our job. You have your job, right? That's your job to do what you do.
Yeah, I was, as I said, throwing a compliment at... Right. The most important compliment for me is the fact that the thing that ran very, very briefly and was considered, you know, a one-night flop, you've got two pictures of it. You know, you have the cast. You've got who wrote it, who produced it, where it was, and a look at it, where it took place. That's huge. I mean, even the Internet Broadway Database is not going to give you pictures. So that's why.
They're not going to give you pictures, and they get a lot of their information from me, because they've called me to ask me if it's okay that they do so. So another, and I'll tell you specifically why that is, because the Internet Broadway Database, which is a wonderful resource, gets all of their information from opening night playbills from the publications, because you can pretty much access opening night playbills going back even 100 years from Lincoln Center and other places.
Oh, wow.
What we did, the one thing that no other publication did, except Best Plays, but not to the extent that we did it, and of course they're no longer around, We followed up, or John Willis did, and now I do. We follow up every with every show that runs to get every single cast replacement so that it is a real complete picture from year to year of who has been in that production. Because if you just go from the opening night playbills, well, you could have 20 credits on Broadway as a replacement, and some people do.
Oh, yeah.
Away, and they're never on the Internet Broadway database.
Yeah, I mean, I just had to write a piece because I'm writing for Stage Buggy now, and someone major just passed. It was Eileen Brennan, was it? Or who died in the past week or so? There was Shirley Hertz.
It was Eileen Brennan is who I was going to say, and then well, Shirley Hertz, the
press agent. No, but it was an actor.
Actor.
No, it was someone known.
I can tell you.
Karen Black. That's who I'm thinking of. Karen Black.
Yes. Karen Black was on Broadway. Yes.
Right. I went first to IBDB. I went to the Internet Broadway database to find out, okay, what she, and it listed four shows. And they were all flops, even Come to the Five and Dine, Jimmy Dean, even though that got made into a movie. But okay, the information was there. This one ran three performances, this one ran five performances. And then there was the first one that she was in, which was actually a hit. But she was an understudy. She was probably in it for maybe three times. But at least she was listed, and I'll bet they got the information from you.
This is why we do what we do. I mean, it's not to create a monopoly or to, you know, monopolize the information of the theater. I mean, you know, John never made a fortune on these books, and that's not why he did it. I don't think that he would have done it if he didn't make anything from it, like I'm doing. But, but you know, not everyone is able to do that or finds it that compelling. I do. I think that Theater World's lucky to have found me, and I'm lucky to have found Theater World, because I'm doing it for the reasons I think that are important historically. I have a very forward-thinking, long-term way of thinking about these things, and people in print don't often, or in theater, for that matter, don't often think past the moment. If we try to get information from a regional theater, you know, we used to be 2, 3, 4, 5 years behind, you probably
remember. I remember, yeah. Because I would buy it every year. I mean,
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes several years later after it comes out, but I would call regional theaters and I would ask them, we would try to get photos and statistical information from their shows just maybe a year or two before, and they had to know they couldn't find it. It's really amazing. And I've done several other publications. I need a photograph from Equus, from an ACT production in California. I tried to call the theater, oh, we don't have those, that's in the 70s, are you kidding me? Why would we have photographs from the 70s? Mm-hmm. And luckily, I actually had the photograph, but I needed the rights from
the photographer or whoever owns. Yeah, right. Yeah.
I called the photographer, and same thing. Are you kidding me? That was the 70s. I don't have those. I sold them at the yard sale 10 years ago or something. So it's really important, because I don't know that, especially particularly with regional theater, I don't know that any other book has photographs or any other archive has photographs. I've still got all of the regional theater's photographs intact.
In the years that you've been doing this, especially since John Willis started ailing and you got to really take the reins, we can see the progression of the book, how much has been added. I mean, the book used to be 200 pages long. It's like 500 pages now, because you're really doing as much as you can to give a picture of theater all over America, not even just in New York. Do you see anything in the next 1 to 3, 5 years that you would further add or change? Is there something boiling in the back of your brain of like, you know what would be really cool is if we had ...
Absolutely. There are a couple things. The biggest one, first and foremost, is we're bringing back the national tours.
Oh, wow.
We have not covered national tours for a while. They have been declining, I would say, in the 2000s, whatever the decade is, whatever word we use for the decade.
The aughts, yeah.
The aughts. And now there's sort of, with the advent of the success of these Disney sort of big budget productions and these production companies, Disney and Clear Channel, Live Nation, they've all figured out a business model that is a sure thing with respect to traveling companies. Very often they're much more successful on the road if they are big budget productions than they're going to be. Of course, this is the same thing going on everywhere in America in every regard. The larger players are sort of taking the business away from the smaller players. I mean, you're not necessarily going to get Cicely Tyson. Well, you may get Cicely Tyson on tour, but that may be all you get in a play with a couple of characters touring the nation, it's not going to be, well, Looped was going to go out with Valerie Harper. It went out with Stephanie Powers. It's, you know, and it's over. I mean, you're not going to get
long. Valerie Harper's unable to tour.
Exactly. Lunt Fontanne sort of tours of shows the way you once were. So that fell by the wayside. Also, while we just made sure that we stayed in print in the late 90s and early 2000s, John Willis had some major health issues. I was also his primary caretaker.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So the fact that the awards and the books even survived is really miraculous, thanks to a lot of people really came through and did a lot of things for free. So we lost the national tour. So we're going to bring back the national tours. We're also going to expand off-Broadway because it's not
good
where I want it to be yet. There are more productions off-Broadway than there are on Broadway and off-Broadway combined. And I used to produce off-Broadway and off-Broadway. And the quality of these productions is sometimes really stellar. I mean, people leave Broadway shows sometimes and think, well, that...
How did that get on Broadway?
Well, yeah, there's stinkers everywhere. But off-Broadway has really created some wonderful companies that have been producing now for 10 and 20 years. Some really wonderful productions. And we're talking about shows that, you know, cost $25,000, $50,000, $75,000. And so they're major productions or major minor productions. And so we're going to expand off-Broadway. And there's always things that when the book comes out, we say, well, you know what we need to include? The synopses were gone there for a while. So a lot of things being incorporated back into the book. I want to continue to expand regional theater. There's probably another 10 or 20 regional companies we'd like to see in there that weren't, through no fault of our own. It's hard to get people to send us the information. And then there's dinner theaters, which are professional theaters.
Well, there aren't that many left in America, but yeah, there's...
many left, which maybe is even more reason that we go ahead and cover them. So there are things, there are frontiers left for us to conquer, but most importantly, just continuing to do what we do, which is, I think, really important. And I really appreciate everyone listening to this, and especially in this age of the changing media. I think it's an exciting time. What Jeff Bezos purchasing the Washington Post.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of things that could potentially come from this, which are scary. Scary what's happening to print media, but also if we don't look through that fear to the opportunity, then it'll be doomed. I mean, part of journalism, as you know, David, has been the excitement behind getting a story and compiling the information and doing the work. So we can't lose that for fear that we're not going to make a living doing it. We have to continue to do what we love to do and hope that the money will come from that. I think that's the only way to survive.
That's spoken like someone in the entertainment business. Although also spoken like a lawyer who can support himself and his quote-unquote hobby.
Do it. I mean, maybe that's
job.
What has to happen.
Yeah. But I want to thank you so much. I mean, not only for being on the radio show, of course, but thank you so much for keeping Theater World going, for making sure that it doesn't go by the wayside like so many things have and will, and for expanding it. I'm thinking by, let's say, 2018, it'll be 1,000 pages long, and you'll have a picture for every show in the New York International Fringe Festival.
Oh, it would be wonderful.
And the Midtown Fringe, and I mean, imagine that. That's something to shoot for, where every single thing, everything, is covered in those pages. You're getting there. You're moving towards it. I can feel it.
Well, listen, it's people like you, honestly, who are supporting us and giving us these kinds of platforms to really talk about the importance of the book. Because when you think about it, not just flip through a book, but when you think about what we're doing and its importance, I think people really do then begin to appreciate us in a much larger way. And I really appreciate you giving us this opportunity.
Well, it's my pleasure, and it should be everybody's pleasure to go find not only this year, well, especially this past year's 2011-2012 edition of Theater World, available everywhere you get books, normally Amazon, etc. Oh, give your website, please.
Well, it's under construction, so Amazon is really the best place to get the book and read about the book and read the reviews of the book. I would really suggest Amazon.com because websites for books are a great place to go, but it's been more important for me to focus our resources on just keeping the book going and improving the quality of the book. And the website is under development at theaterworld.com, which we own.
And is that theater with an E-R or an R-E?
R-E.
Theaterworld.com. Okay. But also Amazon to buy this year's book and the last bunch of books. And can they even pre-order 2012-13? Are you at that
absolutely
stage?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Actually, it's good that you mentioned that, but I think it's applausepub.com. You can pre-order.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Ben Hodges, for being here and doing what you do.
Thank you, Dave.